is Pure Decking for March the 6th, 1492. This is a show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight I've got Analog and Sard. Hey, guys.
Yo, Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Yeah, first year to pop in my head, man. I think that joke is getting a little bit played out. We've only been doing the show for 65 versions now, so... I think
as you said last time, you need to, you know, start pre-planning the dates.
Yeah. Of course, then I'd have to actually, like, pick a year that means something to in relation to that. I guess you could get on Wikipedia and, or, like, this day in history or something like that and pick an interesting year.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
So I might have to start doing that. Anyways, I've got no feedback to speak of, so I'm going to move straight into current events here. First one up, this one is good and frightening. It's from Wired. When U.S. authorities shuttered sports wagering site Bodog.com last week, it raised eyebrows across the net because the domain name was registered with a Canadian company and ostensibly putting it beyond the reach of the United States government. Working around that, the feds went directly to VeriSign, a U.S.-based internet backbone company that has the contract to manage the covered.com and other generic top-level domains. EasyDNS, an internet infrastructure company, protested that the ramifications of this are no less than chilling, and every single organization branded or operating under .com, .net, .org, .biz, you know, any of the other basic top-level domains, needs to ask themselves about their vulnerability on the whims of the U.S. federal and state lawmakers. But despite EasyDNS and others' outrage, the U.S. government says it's gone that route hundreds of times, which we know is true. Furthermore, it says that it has the right to seize any .com, .net, or .org domain because the companies that have the contracts to administer them are based on U.S. soil, according to Nick Navas, an Immigration and Customs Enforcement spokeswoman. Oh, Nicole Navas, sorry. The controversy highlights a unique control the U.S. That is badly written. Unique control the U.S. continues to hold over key components of the global domain name system and rips a Band-Aid off a historic sore point for other nations. A blah, 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 blah. Essentially, the United States is claiming that because VeriSign controls the top-level domains, and VeriSign is a U.S.-based company based in Virginia, that they have the right to enforce United States laws against any website registered with the .org, .net, or .com.
Talk about fucked up and going, like, the backdoor fucking of these companies.
Yeah. That's certainly one way to put it.
I mean, I don't know. I guess it makes sense because, you know, their DNS or, you know, their SSL cert, like they said, is based in the U.S., but the company is based out of a different country. It's still fucked.
Yeah, it comes down to they want to enforce their laws against entities that, whereas their service is accessible in the States, I mean, anybody can hit a website, the company itself is not based in the States, so you would think United States law would not apply. Right. Except they were able to extradite that kid from Britain, so.
Right, that too. I guess, I mean, what is this going to do? It's going to force those companies to move everything out of the U.S.
Did.
Right, yeah, I guess everyone else will have to follow suit, and then yay for bringing money and stuff into the U.S. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they're doing a good job of killing the last viable sector of the economy here. Way to go, U.S. government.
Yeah, exactly.
So every .com, .net, .org.
They're claiming they have the right to enforce United States law against those domains.
So every one of them, VeriSign, basically is the end-all be-all.
Well, yeah, they are the top-level domain. They are, anybody, like, even though our domains are registered through not VeriSign, they're registered through a different DNS systems. At the end of the day, it all goes into the VeriSign DNS system. VeriSign actually runs the DNS servers, the top level, the dot, so to speak.
Right.
So yeah, at the end of the day, they can yank domains. Hmm. So, and that's where they've been doing it. Like all these domain name seizures that have been going on for a year now. That's
how long?
Doing it.
How long until the world cries out and says enough is enough and forces them to move those domain names, you know, the top level domain to somewhere neutral, I guess, or someplace that doesn't won't impose?
I don't know. I mean, you got to think, like, well, I'm not worried about moving galaxy15radio.com because we make a point of not breaking any laws. That's why we specifically are very careful with the music we play.
Right.
So, right, but I think eventually it'll get to the point that it may not necessarily be that you're breaking laws, but, oh, you're speaking out against something that we
sure.
don't
it's
like.
Oh, sure. It's like, oh, you made fun of President Obama. It's like you just called him Obama, not Obama. So we're just going to censor you. And
Obama is llama.
Somebody got the joke. But so now you're absolutely right. I think we're going to see websites starting to register themselves with different top level domains, things that are outside of U.S. control for that very reason. And since they're still trying to pass laws that let them implement the Great Firewall of the United States, I think we're going to end up seeing multiple smaller internets. Like, you know, the U.S. will have its internet, China will have its internet, and there'll be certain places where they're hooked up and filtered like crazy.
Right.
Which is unfortunate, because that kind of defeats the point.
Exactly.
So, what other top-level domain registrars are there?
Well, a lot of countries run their own. Like Canada's got CA, Britain's got .co.uk. You know, all the oddball ones that people are using to, you know, end URLs creatively, like the way like Delicious does and stuff like that.
Right.
And I don't know who controls the .xxx. So, at least not off the top of my head, I could look it up. But
what about ones like .tv, .info,
.tv. There's several of them that were reserved for individual countries, mm-hmm. and they get to run their own. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but yeah, like the .tv, I don't remember where that one's actually for, but it's some little island somewhere, I think. So
it's the same thing. Like I forget who owns it, but I use a .cc. And it's some little,
mm-hmm.
little country, little island. I looked it up once. I don't remember what it is now.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, you're picking it because you like the ending, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's simple and easy to remember.
Yeah, that's technically outside of, yeah, that one's not actually controlled by VeriSign. So
.tv for the island of Tuvalu.
Yeah, that was what it was. Tuvalu. There we go. All right, moving right along. This next one's from telegraph.co.uk. Hey. Google not responsible for internet graffiti. This one's great. In a ruling which gives Google widespread immunity from English defamation laws, Mr. Justice Eady, that's a weird way of writing that, must be an English thing, upheld pleas that is merely a platform provider and should not be regarded as a publisher or even as one who's authorized publication. It is no doubt often true that the owner of a wall which has been festooned overnight with defamatory graffiti could acquire scaffolding and have it all deleted with whitewash, said the judge. But he added, that is not necessarily to say, however, the unfortunate owner must, unless this has been accomplished, be classified as a publisher. So what they're saying here is Google is not, you know, because Google hosts Blogger, this is actually in relation to Blogger, which if I finish the story, that, you know, they're not responsible for what other people put up. And it's just like somebody who owns a wall is not responsible for what somebody comes along with a spray paint can and puts on there. You know, sure, they could take it down, but, you know, while it's up, they're not a publisher. So to finish the story off here, the judge's decision is a disaster for former Conservative Party hopeful and law student Payam Tamiz, Tamiz, T-A-M-I-Z, I'm American, I'm sorry, who sued Google Inc. over reactions to an online blog labeling him, without a shred of justification, as a drug dealer and a thief. The ruling means his defamation case is now dead in the water, and Mr. Tamiz, who last year stood as a Conservative Party candidate in local elections in Thanet, Kent, is facing up to almost, 20,000 euro, pounds, not euros, pounds, in lawyer bills. Mr. Tamiz sued over 8 stinging comments made in reaction to a blog posted on Google's blogger.com platform. Among other things, they accused him of being a drug dealer and having stolen from his employees. So what the UK court has done here is said that Google is not, you know, responsible for what goes up on Blogger. the people who post on Blogger are, and because that could be really rough to track down. This guy's basically stuck in his lawsuit.
Right, and that's the way it should be. How can they be responsible for what gets posted?
Well, they can't. That's one of the reasons we have the DMCA provisions we do here, is that just as long as you know they've got a system in place to pull stuff down. But yeah, there's absolutely no way. If they had to be responsible for everything that was posted, they couldn't run their service. You couldn't run any user-provided service on anything. Because
exactly.
You'd have to have an army of lawyers combing through everything that was posted before it went up. Nobody could do it.
Yep.
So
the only thing that he could actually make Google do, and the only time that he could actually sue Google, is if, one, he files a lawsuit for them to, or files a motion for them to make sure that it is removed for defamation of character.
Yeah.
And then they don't comply within the time slot, yes, then he would have a legal case to sue them.
Right, but again, it's not for monetary. It'd be just to get the thing pulled.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, there's probably more going on in this case, but it's just interesting to me because you've got somebody who's getting that, hey, these guys don't control what's going up here. They're just hosting a service. You could argue the intelligence of giving anyone on the internet a place to write stuff on a wall, but you know, I mean, that's what a lot of stuff is online anymore. So I don't know. I mean, it's just like, if you say, okay, yeah, Google, you got to be responsible, or you know, for this defamation of character case here, you just shut down Blogger, WordPress, Facebook, Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're gone. They have to be blocked in the UK for reasons of lawsuit. So it's just a practical decision on their part.
Right.
Finally, a judge gets his gold star.
Yay. So, anyways, this next one up is from Symantec, which is this is hilarious. I'm laughing because the article is actually really good. They've got screenshots and everything. It's just some of the language they use gets really comical because they've taken the same business terms they would use for any other instance of what they found, like if it had happened to a company, and they applied it to these anonymous pastebin posts. In 2011, dozens of anonymous members who participated in distributed denial-of-service attacks in support of anonymous hacktivism causes were arrested. In these DDoS attacks, supporters using the low-orbit ion cannon denial-of-service tool would voluntarily include their computers in a botnet for attacks in support of Anonymous. In the wake Anonymous member arrests this week, it is worth highlighting how Anonymous supporters have been deceived into installing the Zeus botnet clients purportedly for the purpose of DDoS attacks. The Zeus client does perform DDoS attacks, but it doesn't stop there. It also steals users' online banking credentials, webmail credentials, and cookies. The deception of Anonymous supporters began on January 20th, 2012, the day of the FBI Mega Upload raid. An attacker took a popular pastebin guide used by Anonymous members for downloading and using the DDoS tool Slowloris and modified it. In this modified version, the attacker changed the download link to a Trojanized version of the Slowloris tool with matching text. When the Trojanized Slowloris tool is downloaded and executed by an anonymous supporter, a Zeus, also known as ZBot botnet client, is installed. After installation of the ZBot botnet client, the malware dropper attempts to conceal the infection by replacing itself with the real Slowloris DDoS tool. Zeus is an advanced malware program that can not be easily removed, blah, 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 format your machine. Anyways, if you pick through the Symantec report here, they've treated it just like any other instance of this happening on the internet. So it's really great seeing things like, you know, they've got a screenshot of the original pastebin post, and they've got it, you know, they've got it with the caption of the legitimate Solaris post on May 2011th of the Anonymous campaign.
That's funny.
Which it is the legitimate Anonymous post, so to speak, but you could argue the legitimacy of them saying, hey, here's Solaris, go use it to take out web servers.
Right.
I would like to point out, Solaris is not an anon tool. It's not like low-orbit ion cannon. Solaris was a legitimate tool developed for testing for a vulnerability that just happens to hit most versions of everything. So they've co-opted it. but still.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, is anyone really surprised that someone would do this? I'm not.
Oh, no. Like, God, no. You never, I never trust any of the executables in an Anion.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you're downloading shit off of Pastebin, who are you really going to trust that shit?
Of course I would not.
Hope, yeah. I mean, I would hope that someone, if you actually go to download it, that you're running it in a sandbox. You use it for a little while, get your jollies, and then, you know, can the VM or roll it back or whatever.
I wouldn't even trust a VM, to be honest with you. If you're going to do stuff like this, get a beater machine. Get an old laptop. Get a desktop you don't care about. Laptops better because you can go to some somebody else's Wi-Fi. And, you know, you can run the tools on that machine. And then when you're done, blow it away and put a fresh install of Windows in. So, you know, use something like Ghost or... the Linux, you know, Linux Ghost, which is not actually Ghost, it's a wrapper on DD. There's a couple of other imaging tools out there these days for free, but
it's too bad they can't gather like analytics. I want to see the people that are like, "Yay, I'm going to help Anon and download this tool." And
well, if they could do that, they'd have a lot more people arrested.
Well, yeah, obviously they would too. But I'm just wondering, like, who the fuck is actually doing this? It's got to be like 13-year-olds that just like, "Yay, I'm a hacksaw.
I've got the low orbit ion cannon. Yay!" I mean, yeah, no. Which we've talked about low orbit ion cannon in earlier episodes of Pure Decking. Geez, way back. Yeah, it's a voluntary botnet. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And Slowlaris is a tool specifically for testing a vulnerability. What I could explain it fairly quickly. What Slowlaris does is it opens a connection to a web server and then immediately starts sending please waits. So if you it's low level TCP. So essentially, they're opening the connection to, in this case, we'll say Apache, and then saying they've got no buffer room, so please wait until my buffer clears. But they never clear it. They never send it. Okay, send me data. And the idea is to open as many of these connections as possible without ever actually sending data to run the server out of RAM.
Right.
Because it has to allocate memory to each open connection, and it doesn't know how long. You know, it's got a timeout, obviously, but the way Slowlaris works is when it gets near the end of where it thinks that timeout is, it'll send another ping to the server to keep the connection open. And because you're not actually moving data across the line, you can open hundreds of these connections to the server and then have it waiting on them. So you're not running it out of bandwidth, you're running it out of RAM, out of buffer.
Yep, so, makes sense.
The fix is actually really simple. You just go in Apache, you go in and you turn down that wait time on how long to keep an open connection when there's no data going across the line. You change it from the default, you like cut it in half. And generally, it doesn't affect legitimate users. So,
right. Couldn't you also say, you know, limit the number of connections from one single IP to this also?
Well, you could. That's one of the reasons Anon is... And a lot of web servers do that anyways. You ever notice how if you're, say, pulling down a lot of little files off a web server, it won't ever let you get more than like two or three at a time?
Exactly.
That's been a default for a long time. But right. That's why they're distributing Slowlaris out to all their volunteers and saying, hey, we want 100 people running it against this server. The idea being that it's easier to bring a server to its knees if you know you got lots of people running it versus one or two.
Yep, makes sense.
But yeah, the Slowlaris tool has actually been fixed for a long time. I think the tool itself is almost 2 years old now. But I'm guessing most websites haven't gone in and fixed it. And at least on Apache, it's a configuration change. I don't remember on IIS, to be honest. I Google it. It's not a difficult thing to fix. All right, this next one is hilarious. This is just great. It's from TorrentFreak. Some internet piracy groups decided to implement some new regulations and standards last week. Instead of releasing TV shows in the XVID AVI format, groups responsible for putting major TV shows online switched to MP4s X264. Outraged by the lack of democracy, some BitTorrent users are directing their anger at bewildered torrent sites and even threatening to boycott releases. And, yeah, TorrentFreak saying, for those who understand what the hell is going on, the whole thing's pretty damned amusing. The problem stems back to a new document, and I've got a link to that in the show notes, which details a set of standards. Live TV show release groups such as LOL and Momentum will have to live up to in order to comply with the so-called scene rules. Not complying with the format means that the release group's work risks being nuked, a term which means something has been rated second class by their pirating peers. The document, the SDX264 TV Releasing Standards of 2012, it is extremely detailed and covers all sorts of technical issues, but the main controversy stems from the adoption of the X264 codec. X264 has become the most advanced video codec over the past few years. Compared to XVID, it is able to provide higher quality and compression at greater SD resolutions. This standard aims to bring quality control back to SD releases. While there are many standalone player streamers such as Tivix, Popcorn Hour, WDTV, HD Media Player, Boxy Extreme, PS3, Xbox 360, iPad, and HD TVs that can play back H.264 and AAC encapsulated in MP4, the doc adds. Somewhere along the lines, a consumer appeared who not only wants everything super quickly and for free, but believes the same should be offered with Class A service. I skipped a bit in the article where they had examples of stuff that was being sent to some of the torrent tracker sites of people essentially cussing them out because it's not in the same format anymore. It's coming out in, you know, the MP4s as opposed to AVIs.
And that's funny.
These people are pissed off about that, and it's like, it's free.
Yeah, beggars can't be choosers.
Right.
Exactly.
And they're threatening to boycott these sites because, and there's even people pirating the MP4 releases and re-uploading them as XVIDs. So,
it doesn't matter. I mean, it's pretty much on most of those releases, people do that anyways. Yeah. I mean, you go on any of those major sites, I can download this this new movie or whatever.
I just think it's funny that the scene release groups have what is essentially an RFC.
Yeah, that's actually pretty funny too, trying to establish releasing standards.
Yeah, I've got that in. I've got it linked in the show notes. It's a pretty detailed document. They've got in there all kinds of stuff about resolutions, about file formats, you know, containers, frame rates, all this other stuff, because they're trying to bring a expected quality to these pirated TV show releases.
Once again, it's free. It's pirated.
Yeah.
Media.
They're trying to bring legitimacy to their piracy groups, I guess. I don't know, but it's the scene rules. So
that's funny, man. Like
there's people bitching about it.
Exactly. There's, and I know people that would go right along with this. They get pissed when they go to, you know, someone, when I've brought things in to share with them, and they're like, well, it's not HD. Like, who the fuck cares? It's still,
it's like,
you know,
if you bring in
whatever
donuts,
you want to look at.
I'm just saying, you know, it's like you bring in the box of donuts and place in the meeting room, and you got somebody in their corner bitching. It's like, well, you didn't bring any blueberry in, or you didn't bring any muffins in. It's like,
but
there's still free donuts for you. What do you care?
Exactly. Bakers can't be choosers. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, so here we go. So that is the most appropriate response to that. So,
yeah,
this one is great. This is from Gizmodo. Actually, it's both from Gizmodo and Mercury News. Analog sent me the Gizmodo link earlier yesterday, and it had me laughing pretty good. So I went and got the original news story off the local paper. Palo Alto police were apparently looking for a single stolen iPad when they arrived Thursday at The Woods, a sprawling apartment complex on Snell Road, according to the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office. The cops had tracked the iPad via GPS, and Assistant District Attorney David Tompkins. The officers didn't have a search warrant, so they knocked on the door and asked the occupants for permission to come in. They consented. They probably thought if they didn't, we suspect something, said Tompkins said. Or they thought, well, I'll let them in, they probably won't find anything. Much to their amazement, the officers found 780 pounds of crystal meth scattered about the place, worth about $35 million. District Attorney Jeff Rawson said roughly 100 pounds, or a little more... 100 pounds or a little more of meth are recovered annually in the county, making the seizure easily at least 6 years worth, he said. I told my dad about the bus, said Rosen, and he said they have $35 million and they can't go out and buy an iPad. Police immediately arrested three people who they declined to identify on Saturday. They contacted the district attorney, major narcotic vendor, blah, 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 blah. Essentially, what happened was somebody reported their iPad being stolen, and they gave the police the access to go in and use the locate my iPad feature of Apple's Mobile Me service. And when they tracked down the iPad, they tracked it to this apartment that had 780 pounds of crystal meth, and the people running the place just let them in.
You can't fix stupid.
I mean, if you're going to run a drug operation of that size, why are you stealing iPads? I mean, I imagine if you're running a drug operation of that size, you don't even speed. It's like you don't give them a reason to look at you, let alone going around stealing high-end electronics.
Well, I mean, it's just criminal stupidity. Look what they're into. Look what they do, man. That's they're freaking idiots.
I know.
I like how it also said, what is it? They found 780 pounds scattered around the place.
Yeah, it's like they kind of had it here, there, and everywhere.
That's hilarious. Is that, I don't know. I'm not obviously into drugs or anything. Do drug dealers just hold, you know, like, oh yeah, that corner over there, that's my meth corner. Oh, and there's some in the bathroom. And if you go look underneath my bed, you want some more, there's some there.
Well, I mean, why not? I've got multiple computer rooms. I've got the studio. I've got the lab. I mean, or sound cave. We're calling it sound cave now. I forgot.
Honestly, for an operation probably this size, yeah, it's in one room. It's in one area, this is where it's at. That's why it's probably easily accessible. 780 pounds worth of crystal meth? That's a freaking bitch load of...
That's a lot, yeah, isn't it?
That's a fuck ton, dude.
And the funny part is, 6 years worth for the county, that's going to keep a lot of cops happy.
There we go. Yeah, that's to put your entire operation, you know, to end it over an iPad, that's just classic. It's classic. But it's like you and I were talking about earlier, Analog. I mean, if you're dumb enough to run that kind of a I don't know, if you're going to really run a drug operation like that, you've probably got to have some intelligence about you.
Honestly, it's probably, this is the guy that where all of the manufacturing doesn't happen here, but all the manufacturing, when it is finished, of the crystal meth,
this is the
warehouse.
The distribution center, essentially. Yeah, yes. This isn't the guy that's running the show. He's just some monkey.
And this isn't actually probably... This isn't the distribution center, like, for the people who run out on the street. This is the distribution center for the distribution centers.
Yeah, he's like a central warehouse where the dealers are... Well, not even the dealers. That's where the people who pick up for the dealers are coming and getting the large quantities. Mm-hmm. So,
and on other notes, you know, I just thought of, you know what this proves?
What's that?
All iPad users do meth. Not only is it trendy, make you look like a hipster, it also makes you look like a meth head.
Nice.
Morphs, I guess we do meth.
Must be. Well, it explains how we've got the energy to run a freaking radio station. Anyways, yeah. All right, can I play? I'm going to quit playing with the soundboard for a minute here. Go right into this next one. The last one we've got, this is also from Gizmodo. Now, I think Fox sent this to me earlier in the evening, but I already had it in the show notes. This is big. The name Sabu should be familiar. As part of LulzSec, a potent offshoot of Anonymous, he masterminded legendary attacks against the CIA, FBI, Sony, and numerous other corporate and government targets. He was their Captain Hook. That was before. Fox News reports that the shadowy hack deity, oh really, they're calling him a deity, is not only confirmed to be 28-year-old New Yorker Hector Javier Monsker. Monsker? I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right. M-O-N-S-E-G-U-R. but that Sabu has been collaborating with the government for months, leading to a string of arrests around the world today. It's unclear how many will be dragged down with Sabu's 9 months of federal collaborating, but it's safe to assume that whenever vestiges of, or whatever LulzSec vestiges are toast, we'll know for sure that when all the indictments are unsealed. According to Fox, the dragnet was thick. On August 15th, 2011, Monsker pleaded guilty to more than 10 charges relating to his hacking activities. In the following few weeks, he worked almost daily out of FBI offices, helping the feds identify and ultimately take down other high-level members of LulzSec and Anonymous, sources said. And by the way, all the pictures of the guy going around the internet are just great. He's making faces. He's doing all kinds of shit. That's right. The man who helped the internet celebrate hashtag fuck FBI Fridays was doing so from an FBI desk.
I had a loss of words. I mean, just, yeah.
Is anybody really surprised?
That's what I was just going to say, dude. Criminals, well, they just, that's what they do. I mean, you find out who they are, you turn them, and then they turn everybody else in.
Well, the thing is, a lot of rumor was going around back around August that, you know, remember they said they had arrested several members of LulzSec, and then LulzSec came back, haha, you got the wrong people.
No, I do remember that. Yeah.
Apparently they didn't. So, you know, either that or, you know, the people said, oh, you got the wrong ones. That was how they were flipping it around. It's like, oh, no, yeah. So they could keep going and turned him. I wonder how much of his sentence he managed to commute by doing this.
Probably a good chunk, I imagine.
Yeah.
Of course. You always want to be the mastermind. That way, when you do get caught,
you can turn everybody else in
to reduce your own sentence.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly.
That's how you're the mastermind.
Double entendre. Nice. All right. Well, it's time to move into this.
Me love you long time.
So the first thing we have up in here is a Firefox add-on called Collusion. And I've got a story from RT.com here that describes it because they did a better job than my quick summary. The owner of Firefox, the world's second most popular browser. I guess Chrome passed it up. Oh, no, they're still talking about IE being the world's most popular browser. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. I was looking at it. It still is.
I was thinking about it, too.
Yeah, like 41% of the internet or whatever.
The world's second most popular browser is backing an add-on, which would allow users to monitor in real time how their actions are tracked and shared by various websites as they surf the net. The tool is currently in development, visualizes the flow of information as a meshwork of bubbles representing different websites. It tracks the sites which the user visits and then shows their known partners, ad companies, behavior profiles, and other third parties. As surfing continues, a pattern emerges revealing that different popular sites are linked to the same data collectors, which is building up their knowledge of the user's habits and preferences. The ultimate goal of those companies is to identify what kind of advertising would ring a bell for each user and then target them accordingly. For instance, Google's controversial new policy aims to share info on its users of various services to build more accurate advertising profiles. The policy came into effect on Thursday amid a chorus of objections from activists and officials that it violates privacy and may be illegal in some jurisdictions. Another example is Facebook, which learns about every visit to a page which has a like button on it. The amount of data collected by Google, Facebook, and other players less known to the general public is astonishing, but the majority of internet users are oblivious to the fact. And Mozilla's new add-on called Collusion aims to change that. Now, I looked at it a little bit. It's pretty cool. It's essentially watching your third cookies and all the URLs it hits, and just shows it to you. That's all it's doing, is showing what all's hit when you load a web page, what kind of data aggregators, the ads, all that good stuff. And the full version of Collusion will work together with other tools like TrackBlocker to allow users to selectively hide from some trackers while allowing others to track them. And I've got the link in the show notes to the actual add-on. It's pretty cool.
It sounds kind of cool.
It's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It would be interesting to see how far that web actually spreads.
Well, Have you given this a shot yet?
No, I haven't had a chance to play with it, but I watched a couple of YouTube videos on it. The really interesting part is watching it, like, as you hit different websites, how a lot of them will link back to the same data collectors. So, well, like we've got Google Analytics on Galaxy 15. So anytime you hit Galaxy 15, you're going to see that link out to Google. And, you know, you, it's amazing seeing that and then seeing, it, you know, other links to it. And it's a really good way of showing you just how much about you, say, Google knows. Just from the what web pages do you hit.
Right. And then the next logical step is something like they were saying to tie it in so you can opt out or anonymize yourself to those services, which is good.
Yeah, it's called the Tails Live City. Anyways.
Yeah.
Anyways, next one up. This one is also very cool. It's RetroShare. It's on SourceForge. RetroShare is a open source, cross-platform, private and secure decentralized communication platform. I'm just reading the slug from their site. It lets you securely chat and share files with your friends and family using a web of trust to authenticate peers and OpenSSL to encrypt all communications. It provides file sharing, messaging, forums, and channels. It is and is serverless. No server gets to see your data, any IAM server, any of that. And there's no server to compromise, so there's no man-in-the-middle attack there. And let's see. Essentially, what it is it's a darknet in a box. You set up your mesh, and other clients in the same mesh connect to you, and it's all SSL encrypted. You can use PGP keys to sign everything, and they're even talking about plugins for things like VoIP.
Nice.
So
okay.
It's just a darknet in a box.
It's just peer to peer communication through a SSL tunnel, open SSL tunnel.
Mm-hmm. And it's using a mesh instead of a server, so it's really difficult to take out.
Cool.
So, next one up. This is a handy thing to have on a Windows box. It's from Nearsoft. It's CurrPorts. CURR ports. It is a network monitoring software that displays a list of all currently open TCP/IP and UDP ports on your local computer. For each port in the list, information about the process that opened the port is also displayed, including the process name, full path of the process, version information, and what time the process was created and the user that created it. In addition, CurrPorts allows you to close unwanted TCP connections, kill the process that opened the port, and save the TCP ports. TCP UDP port information to HTML, XML, or tab delimited text. CurrPort automatically marks with pink color suspicious TCP UDP ports owned by unidentified applications. And now, obviously, you can get a lot of the information with existing tools that are already in your in pretty much any operating system these days. That would be your netstat command. But this is a nice little GUI. It's, you know, easy to use. And if you're not familiar with the netstat command, it's much, much quicker than sitting there trying to figure it out. It's an easy way to see what ports are open on your machine, and it is something you should do every once in a while, especially if your machine is acting odd.
Most definitely. I've used the sysinternal suite, the Process Explorer, and does something similar to that, but this is kind of cool.
No, it's just there's lots of programs out here that do this. It's just... I used this one the other day to help out somebody who I couldn't explain how to use the netstat command to, so it was pretty handy.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so I had to prove to them that their machine was, in fact, not rooted. They were just crazy, and this was helpful in doing that.
Cool. So,
I'll have to give this a look later.
Yeah, I mean, it's the netstat command, but it's in a GUI. That's really all it is. And you can save things out to a file, so if you need to send it to somebody, which is what I wanted... So.
Yeah, exactly. Handy for those people, grandmas and grandpas, if you want really need to take a look at their machine. Be like, hey, just run this.
Yeah, just export, run this and
send me this.
Send me the XML file or the HTML file there, and I'll figure out what's up.
Right.
Now, the last thing I have in Digital Dojo is, of course, a preview of Thursday. You know, I'm gonna keep doing that. I like the concept. We did that last week with the little brute force tool before we did the big brute forcing list of tools on Thursday. So... what I have for the final thing is Windows 8 Consumer Preview came out. It is a beta demo of the next version of Windows. And, of course, I'm going to do a big dig into it for Thursday's Digital Dojo.
You know what? You need a big booing sound on the soundboard now. Boo. That's my ad.
Hang on. I might have something worse.
keep going. Say, we need like a whole crowd. Just booing at this thing. I saw I want to say it was a Tech Republic did a
here,
YouTube
how's this?
Video.
Here, how's this?
Yeah, that works too.
but wait, Windows 8 shall be the greatest. It shall rule them all. Perfect.
So, anyways, I'm gonna throw it on a couple of machines. I'm actually gonna throw it on an ancient laptop because it's a tablet, even though I know it doesn't like its graphics card.
Nice.
So I'm gonna see how it handles that. I've got a few other things I want to play with it on, of course, in a VM. But I'm also going to look at one of the things I noticed because I was looking at some stuff for work is there's already StarDock has announced they're going to have a program for turning giving you back your start menu.
And of course,
there was a program that came out around the time of Vista's release that gave you the Vista start menu on XP. And people have figured out you can load that in Windows 8 Preview and get your start menu back.
Nice.
So yeah. I'm wanting to dig into it and see what it really takes to turn Windows 8 into a usable system. And I don't know. I mean, I last time I played with the developer preview, I was not impressed. But
yes, same here. I loaded it up way back when and also not impressed at all. It's just the evolution of Windows. I mean, it's always they come out with a decent OS and then a shit OS, and then a decent one, then a shit one. And well, we're obviously on the down slope side because we had Vista, which was shit, Windows 7, which was decent, so 8, naturally, going to be a big old pile.
But, well, and we're going to have people where I work who are going to want it fairly soon after it comes out, so I need to get familiar with it as it is. But I'm going to evaluate it. I'm going to see what we can do about turning it into a real operating system. I'm going to give the Metro interface another chance here. I was not happy with it last time I played with it, but I'll give it a chance. But it's still built on Windows 7, so at the end of the day, it's still Windows under the hood. So right. If there's some tweaks we can do to turn it into a Windows desktop, it might be an easy way to get a free copy of Windows.
Right, right. So, and I'm sure there is. It's just, I don't know. It's one of those things is like, should you really have to do that to get a usable operating system?
No, of course not. But you have to do it on if you use Ubuntu these days as well, you know, strip that crap out and turn it into a real desktop. But I don't know. I have not done much with the latest version of Ubuntu, the 12.04 that's coming out. So I will give Unity another shake when that version of Ubuntu comes out. But the last version I played with was just crap. So anyways, that's pretty much all I had. So of course, listen to the stream. We've been updating it. Sard, I saw you in the box earlier. Were you adding new stuff to the stream, or were you messing with...
Yep. I found a cool site that was linked off of some feedback. It was like link of a link of a link type deal. I should have brought that website up. I think it was Soundbird is the website, but anyways...
Are you talking about the feedback from Nomad?
Nomad. Yeah. Yeah. Off of his site, and then it linked to another site, and yada yada. I want to say it was Soundbird, but I found they have some Creative Commons music on there, and found some cool stuff I liked. So
nice. Yeah. Of course, I have nothing every Saturday, Pure Decking every Tuesday and Thursday. The new Between the Sheets is on Fridays, supposedly. Nameless Review 7, whenever somebody gets a cattle prod and can find BSV. And the Galaxy 15 Radio site and Twitter handles make use of the feedback forms. We like hearing from people, even if it's just a string of obscenities and telling us why we're wrong. Although, if you are going to send me a feedback saying you're wrong, I would appreciate a link and an explanation. So, yeah, no, just the email with the big 72-point font, you're wrong, is not very helpful. So, it's like, yeah, that doesn't work.
Right.
I shall send that to you later.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm probably going to get like 5 or 6 of those now. It's like, no, if you're going to tell me I'm wrong, tell me why so I can learn.
You're wrong. You can be taught. You're wrong.
You're wrong because I say you're wrong, asshole. So, let's see. That's all I got. Anyways, we're going to close out tonight with a special request from Analog just for RU.
I feel like we need soul to sing while speaking. Do you have any ideas? Did he say something funny and sort of lighthearted, isn't it?
Tiki tiki hole.